in decades. In a section on the United Kingdom, Human Rights Watch's 2023 global report, a detailed assessment of the human rights landscape across the world, raises grave concerns over laws either proposed or already in force. They are the Public Order Bill, which would restrict the right to protest and increase penalties, the Elections Act, requiring voter identification, the law limiting people's rights to judicially review social security and immigration decisions, and the Nationality and Borders Act, which criminalizes asylum seekers taking irregular routes, increases powers to strip people of citizenship, and allows offshore processing of asylum claims. The last act, the Nationality and Borders Act, and the UK government's subsequent policy of transferring asylum seekers to Rwanda has been widely criticised, including by the United Nations and civil society groups. Concerns have also been raised over the proposed repeal and replacement of the Human Rights Act. The London Evening Standard has also covered this story and tells us more. The new United Nations Human Rights Chief has urged the British government to reconsider its plans to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda, warning that in the past, similar offshoring schemes had led to deeply inhuman treatment of refugees. In his first public comments on the controversy since taking office 3 months ago, Volker Turk rejected Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's description of the £140 million deal as common sense, saying as well as being legally and ethically problematic, it was also very costly and unlikely to work. Volker Turk said, "You cannot offshore your responsibilities to another state in the way that is envisaged by the British government." It does raise very serious concerns, both from an international human rights and international refugee law perspective. The High Court ruled recently that the Conservative Party's plan to send people seeking protection in Britain to the Central African country of Rwanda was lawful, dismissing an application from asylum seekers, charities and a border officials union to stop it. More than 40,000 people have crossed the channel in small boats in 2022, the highest number since figures began to be collected in 2018. The journey is perilous. Recently, 4 people died after their boat got into difficulties off the coast of Kent. Volker Turk, who succeeded Michelle Bachelet as the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights in October, said there were ways and means for how governments could tackle smuggling gangs and ensure that those in need of protection receive it. But, he added, the Rwanda program would likely do neither. Volker Turk, an Austrian lawyer and former Assistant High Commissioner at the United Nations Refugee Agency, said he had seen how Australia's offshore processing centres on Nauru and Manus Island in Papua New Guinea had been marked by human rights abuses. The latter was closed after the country's Supreme Court ruled it illegal. Volker Turk said, "The way that asylum seekers were treated in Nauru and in Manus Island was deeply, deeply inhuman."
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن می کند
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah Allahu wa la ilaha illallah
Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. In the early days of Islam, the ideal Islamic government ruled twice. First, at the time of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his pure progeny, and secondly, when Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, governed in Kufa. They were just like people in their dress style and association. Justice was so applied that if a citizen from the lowest class of the society took a legal action against the first person in the country, the judge used to summon the leader who would attend the court.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the self-building and combat with the self. In one of his speeches, he said that you correct yourself, your country too becomes corrected. Now, in this part, he's talking to the ministers or those who have some kind of responsibilities in the country, because those who are the lawmaker, those who are the politicians, those who have effect in the society, those maybe as a professor, as a teacher, a person who is an activist in the country, it is for them that we, when we want to reform our country, we want to bring a change into our country, we should begin from ourselves. You know, if a person who is in a place in the government, if he does not follow the rules, if he does not follow the laws, if he breaks the laws, if he takes money for the things that he performs and he does not perform the right thing in his country, then obviously he cannot bring a reformation in the country. He cannot bring any kind of change in the country. If one of the ministers or the politicians or activists, if he's involved in the bribe, how can he bring justice to the society? Says that you need to correct yourself. The correction means you need to say no to the bribe. You need to say no to any kind of injustice. If you want this country to be filled with the justice, if you do not want oppression in this country, you should not be the oppressor. So if you say no to the oppression, if you say no to the injustice, if you say no to the evil, then yes, on the country level, you can make decisions which will make this country free of oppression, which can make this country free of injustice, which can make this country free of evil. And therefore, we're going to have the pure and peaceful society. You know, the way it is talked about, Madinatul Fazila, there is the terminology in the Islamic terms, Madinatul Fadila, the time of the Prophet, the city that was a superior city, the city in which there was no injustice, the city in which there is no oppression, the city in which there are the equal rights of the people. So this ideal city cannot be attained, cannot be achieved if we as an individuals are not correcting ourselves. If we want to correct our country, the basic thing that we need to do is to correct ourselves. When I do this on the individual level, then on the social level, I will have the effects on the society as well.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture. Welcome back. In the first part of the Aperture, we witnessed various communities which have walled themselves in so that others may be kept out. In urban France, the middle class has increasingly retreated into gated communities. Likewise, in Rio de Janeiro, the middle class seeks to avoid the slums literally across the road from their gated condominiums. Stay with us for more as we explore the wall in Iraq, which American forces have constructed to cordon off the areas of Baghdad.
Abu Hazm's children go to school in Doura, within the walls that encircle the area. So, who wants the wall torn down? No one wants to keep it. What do you think will happen in the future? In Doura, our neighbourhood. Yes, Ali. I want more peace and no more walls and gardens. Sports clubs. Better education. So, less walls and more schools. I want to go to hospital without problems. How about you, Hausa? Take the walls away so I can get to the stadium easily. Tell me, what do you think when you see the walls? We're enclosed. It's like prison. I've tried to reassure them about the future. We talk about it, of their vision, and we all hope things will work out. Life doesn't stand still, it evolves. In the areas closest to the walls, the locals are particularly angry. Look, it's a prison. To go to the market, I need to take a taxi and another one to come back. And the market is only a few steps away, behind the wall. And during school, it's even worse. The kids get all muddy. Okay, I know they want to stop the terrorists, but they could take away two pieces of the wall to make our lives a bit easier. It really affects us. Like from dawn till dusk, all we see is this wall. We all know each other here. We all have different religions, but there are no problems. The other wall drives me nuts. Look at my legs. I'm sick, and I don't have a car to get there. How am I meant to go to hospital? We're all depressed. Put yourself in our place. If you woke up and had this wall right in front of you every day, what would you do? Tell me. In February 2011, Iraqi demonstrators take part in the Arab Spring. They protest having to live walled up. In the weeks that follow the demonstrations, the government will organize a large-scale communications campaign. The Ministry of Interior takes two busloads of journalists to the areas once held by the insurgents, and now completely walled off. Good morning, sir. Now, would it help you if we remove some parts of the wall? Oh, yes, sir. The wall was very harmful to us, but it also brought you safety. Oh, to begin with, yes, but that's all over now. So what would you like then? Leave the wall or take it away? Take it away, please. Where will we put it? Wherever you like. The next morning, it's back to the same area to see if the work is continuing. The crane has disappeared. Just the residents remain, as angry as ever. They never tell the truth. They promised the wall would be gone in a week. Nothing's changed. They say yes, 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 today for sure. And then they come back 2 years later. They built this wall as a barrier between my neighbors and myself. They should take it down and put it on the border with Saudi Arabia. They should have police patrols, not walls. In our brave new world, the differences between military and civilian security technology are becoming blurred. What the army invents to protect its own bases, gated communities adopt for the benefit of individuals.
So when the arm goes down, the teeth come up automatically. That way, if a vehicle tries to ram through the arm, they're going to shred their tires.
Now you have digital zoom while recording the entire area, so you're not losing any video coverage while tracking a person or an automobile that might be coming onto your property.
And present a card, and then this sends the data stream to an access controller, so you can select when someone can get in and when they can get out.
We can put our software, can be loaded on a smartphone, so if there's a violation at the north gate coming into the gated community, the guard can get an alert on his smartphone with the video clip.
There's like an integration of military materials and civilian materials in terms of security nowadays.
Correct. For residential use, it's just a lighter duty machine, as opposed for things that are built specifically for military or border operations. They have to be much heavier duty.
Thais's mother wants to buy an apartment in this condominium that is even more luxurious than their own. But it's even further from the center of Rio. Regis lives on the other side of the railings, just a few meters away, but has never stepped foot inside.
Do you have any friends inside?
Very few. Well, actually, none. I don't know anyone. But, you know, I don't want to climb the wall that encircles them. I'm not interested in that. I'm just not curious about what it's like inside. I know the kind of person that lives there. My boss, for example. I've never been to his house, but I've got a pretty good idea what it's like. White shirt, yellow tie. Security is very polite. And they don't miss a thing. It's like a labyrinth, a maze. You go in one side and out the other. At least there is an exit. Regis might have said no, but passing the splendid houses every day, he does dream of winning the lottery. Yeah, of course, I'd buy myself a beautiful place. A manor even, with a football pitch, a pool, barbecue. And what about security? I don't know if I'd have any. Maybe a camera. And a pit bull. Compared to the favelas in Rio, the Mirai housing estates are havens of tranquility. Hey, no scooters here. It's no good. There are people who live here. And it's not good for the kids. Go on, guys. All they have in common is the absence of the state. When his neighborhood became dangerous for the public services, Zubir spoke to the housing administration about controlling the rowdier elements. The mediator's method is to be firm, but not unpleasant. And there's a place available until midnight for the kids who have nowhere else to go. In the past, it was the community police that did this kind of work. Jean-Pierre Avrin used to be the head of the Toulouse police. He's now left the national force and is working for the municipal police. He'd set up a community policing project in the housing estates of Mirai. The video is barely 10 years old, but is now almost historic, certainly unusual. Relaxed-looking police in shirt sleeves in Mirai. The police should not be cut off from the people. It won't be effective. The police have to be close to the citizens. It's the only way to make it work. I think the community police I knew was well liked by the residents. They used to call the youngsters by their first names. And instead of fining them something straight away, they'd say, "Oh, if you could move your car, please, that would be great."
They spoke to the kids and the kids would shake their hands. Now, if you shake a policeman's hands, you'd be considered an informer. Nicolas Sarkozy puts an end to community policing when he is the Interior Minister in 2003. He summons Avrin and his men before the cameras to let them know he's not pleased by their results. There are many of you where the delinquents are.
Vous n'êtes pas des travailleurs sociaux.
You're not social workers. The principal mission of the police is to investigate, arrest, and fight criminal behavior. When I look at the statistics of 2001, 2002 are bad enough, but 2001, to humiliate police officers live in front of the cameras, I had never seen anything like that before. For those who were present, for the policemen, those who were involved for 4 years, to tell them like that, it was a disgrace, disloyal. In the 3 years after the disbanding of the community police, the incidence of violent crime increased by 48% in Mireille. And the rioting witnessed throughout France in 2005 ravages the neighborhood. If they venture into Mireille these days, the police come in body armor. The area is tough, and not just for the police. The nurses don't come as often, neither do the firemen, and the ambulances have stopped coming altogether. It sort of became abandoned because they were scared about being ambushed by the youngsters. Not to mention the police. To them, they are the state. So people no longer support the state. Well, let's say they don't trust the state anymore. In the 7 days spent on the estates, we only spotted one police car, and that was a long way off. After saying we could interview them, the Toulouse police changed their minds. In 3 years, the National Police Force has been cut by 11,000. You can't claim that security is a priority if you cut thousands of police jobs. There was a sharp increase in the number of cars burned, physical attacks, the absence of police on the ground, especially in the more difficult zones. As soon as authority is absent, especially the police, it's like nature, which can't stand vacuum. It creates a replacement authority, which may differ depending on the area or circumstances. I was summoned before senior police officers, and they said, "So, what's all this about then? Is it a militia?" Everyone's talking about it. They felt threatened by it. It bothered them, calling us a militia. A militia with no weapons. If you want to call us a militia without weapons. Our weapons are words. That's it, really. It's a small aperitif in the open air. Here we are then. We said we wouldn't make too much noise so as not to be a nuisance. After that, we said, well, you better leave. Take your bottles and leave. And don't leave bottles lying around here because they get broken and that could cause a lot of damage. The difference is that if a policeman comes to check us, he might smile, but he's stressed. I don't know if he lives out in the countryside and then comes here, but it's better when people who grew up around here and who know what it's all about and who's who, they sort of understand all of that. We're here to stay with them. Sort it out peacefully, quietly, like. We're getting ready, it seems, to allow private security firms to take over some of the work on public property, say, which is a terrible mistake, because all it will do is aggravate the differences between the haves and the haves-not. A two-speed security, in other words. There'll inevitably be one sort of security for the rich and another for the poor, to put it simply. The Rocinha Favela in Rio. The city's prefect is about to inaugurate a brand new health center in the middle of the favela. The drug traffickers are invisible. The prefect has come without an armed escort. We're going to urbanize all the favelas in the city by 2020. All of them. Rosinha will change. There will be peace. And listen well, I mean peace. The governor will be responsible. Everyone has a right to live and live in good health. Here's the plaque. So applause now. For President Lula's Brazil, the fight against crime means investing in the public services. The people know it, and so do the thugs. The party's over here. At the same time, we need health and education programs, more daycare, more buildings, and to change the urban policies. All that will transform people's lives. Itamar Silva has lived his entire life in a favela and was one of the first to benefit from state aid. He's a respected intellectual and a man who is angry. In his view, more than public funds will be needed to tear down the walls which separate the rich and the poor in Brazil. The investment we're seeing today in the favelas is only very recent. It's considered dangerous, a place that needs supervision, otherwise we'll all become criminals. What I say, it's not true. If it was true, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. Yes, unfortunately, because that's what we need to happen. In the evening, there's a big party in Rosinha. A new street has been opened. The government has demolished some hovels and built a sort of avenue whose buildings match the acrobatic and multicolored style of the favelas. Another reason to party. The drug traffickers have hung up their weapons and made way for samba. In the background are the condominios, over which night is falling in complete safety. Tell me, wouldn't you be better off in a condominium? Listen, I've been here 50 years and I'm not budging. It's marvelous up here. But you don't want to be safer? Oh, it's very safe here. Anyone can come here and everyone is welcome. No problems.
Speaking of walls, perhaps we can mention more walls which are undermining regional and world peace. The segregation wall built by the Zionist regime of Israel in the West Bank, Palestine. And the recent wall in Hungary built to keep out asylum seekers trying to reach Europe. And that's it for this week on Aperture. Until next week and another episode of Aperture, goodbye.
in the limelight.
Oxfam figures show that hundreds of Saudi-led attacks on civilians were carried out over recent periods using weapons supplied by the US and the UK. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, the UK has been helping to fuel a renewed pattern of violence against civilians in Yemen through its arms sales to the Saudi-led US-backed coalition. A new report has warned. In the report titled Fueling Violence, Oxfam said they had counted more than 1,700 attacks on civilians in Yemen between January 2021 and the end of February 2022, a quarter of which were by the coalition solely using weapons supplied by the US and the UK. During the period reference, Oxfam found that the coalition was responsible for 87 civilian deaths and 136 injuries, as well as 19 attacks on hospitals, clinics, and ambulances, and 293 attacks that forced people to flee their homes. Martin Butcher, Oxfam's policy advisor on arms and conflict and author of the report, said in a statement, "The sheer number of attacks on civilians is a stark testament to the terrible tragedy of the people of Yemen have suffered. Our analysis shows there is a pattern of violence against civilians, and all sides in this conflict have not done enough to protect civilian life, which they are obligated to do under international humanitarian law." Yemen descended into the war in 2014. Middle East Eye contacted the Saudi embassy in London but did not receive a response by the time of publication. The British Department of International Trade told MEE that the UK took its export control responsibilities seriously and operates one of the most robust and transparent export control regimes in the world. A spokesperson for the department said, "We consider all our export applications thoroughly through a strict risk assessment framework and keep all licenses under careful and continual review as standard." The UK regime has come in for repeated criticism over its decision to continue selling arms to Saudi Arabia, despite the concerns raised over human rights abuses. The Campaign Against the Arms Trade, CAAT, is set to challenge the government's ability to sell arms to the kingdom in the High Court later this month. A previous court challenge in 2019 forced the UK regime to suspend arms sales, but after an internal review, sales resumed in 2021. The country has licensed at least £7.9 billion in arms to Saudi Arabia across 547 licenses since 2015. However, according to CAAT, the true value of arms sales could be more than £23 billion, around $28 billion, when additional open licenses are taken into account. Oxfam's policy advisor on arms and conflict and author of the report, Martin Butcher said the intensity of these attacks would not have been possible without a ready supply of arms. That is why it's vital the UK government and others must immediately stop the arms sales that are fueling the war in Yemen, Butcher added. According to UNICEF, more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed as a result of the war in Yemen.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. Up until this moment, this meeting has been exclusively devoted to women and has been overflowing with outstanding, excellent ideas. The talks given by the women here were very good, and I personally truly benefited from them. Some recommendations were made. God willing, a solution will be found for these matters. These matters, they need to be discussed there or in other places, especially the issue of employing our intelligent, skilled, experienced, knowledgeable, scholarly, wise, perceptive women in different places in the country where decisions are made. This is an important matter. Of course, this issue has occupied my mind too. We need to find a solution for this. God willing, we shall find a way. We will see what can be done. Well, you heard many good things from these women today. Before I forget, I would also like to admire this song that the children sang today. It was truly praiseworthy. Both the song and the music were very good, and it was performed very well. I would like to thank all those involved in it. I would like to address a few points about the issue of women today. They are some important points in my opinion. I may have mentioned them before, or perhaps you may have spoken about them, but it is still good to emphasize them. I have talked about this here before to the scholarly women of Iran and also to those who listen to these talks.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
On the issue of women, our stance toward hypocritical Western claimants is a position of demand, not defense. There was a time, many years ago, when a number of students in a university asked me, "What do you have to say for yourself in defense of such and such case?" I told them, "I don't have a defense. I have the right to be on the offensive." It is the same when it got to the issue of women. The world is to blame. When I say the world, I am referring to the Western world, Western philosophy, and the existing Western culture. Of course, what I'm talking about is the modernized West. I am not concerned with the historical West. That is a different matter. The modernized West is the one that has been expressing its opinion on all aspects of life for the last 200 years. We demand answers from them. They are guilty with regard to the issue of women. They are to blame. They have truly done harm. They have committed crimes. Therefore, the things I am saying are not in defense. We are expressing the Islamic viewpoint and beliefs. This is the Islamic stance. Up until this moment, this meeting has been exclusively devoted to women and has been overflowing with outstanding excellent ideas. The talks given by the women here were very good, and I personally truly benefited from them.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
In the limelight.
Most Americans do not accept President Joe Biden's explanations about the real reasons behind the increasing cost of living and say his administration has performed poorly in managing the U.S. economy. The U.S. president claims that Russia is responsible for the increase in the price of oil, gas, and foodstuffs, but new opinion polls show the weak performance of his administration and Biden's misguided domestic and foreign policies have created economic hardship for the American people. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Wall Street Journal has covered this story and tells us more. The latest Wall Street Journal poll shows a majority of voters think the economy will be in worse shape in 2023 than it is now, and roughly two-thirds say the nation's economic trajectory is headed in the wrong direction. The survey conducted between 3 and 7th of December suggests, despite U.S. official claims and statistics that the economy is in good shape, and that inflation is under control, their figures and claims haven't altered the way many feel about the risk of a recession, something many economists have forecast as likely. Republican poll participant David Rennie, a 61-year-old retired executive with the Boy Scouts of America who lives in Shelton, Connecticut, said, "I just think We are headed toward a recession, and it could be a pretty big one. Interest rates are skyrocketing, and that's going to take us down. The U.S. Federal Reserve on Wednesday, 14th of December, approved an interest rate increase of 0.5 percentage point and signaled plans to keep raising rates at its next few meetings to combat high inflation. The move reflected some moderation after 4 consecutive increases of 0.75 percentage points each. Economic pessimism is strongest among Republicans, with 83% expecting the economy to worsen. Slightly more than half of independents feel that way, while 22% of Democrats feel that way as well. Democratic pollster John Anzalone, who conducted the survey with Republican pollster Tony Fabrizio, said, "Our economic diagnostics have become partisan. If there was a Republican president, we might see the reverse." Tony Fabrizio said Democrats aren't paying as much of a political price as one might expect for so many people having negative feelings about the U.S. economy. He said, "You would normally see that translate into big bad news for the Democrats. Younger voters are more pessimistic about the economy's prospects next year than older voters. Roughly 6 in 10 of those aged between 18 and 34 expect it to be worse over the next year, while 42% of those aged 65 and older feel that way." Democratic poll participant Kendra Lewis, a 38-year-old business consultant and entrepreneur who lives in Fayetteville, Georgia, said she is already seeing some of the small business people she works with act as if they are in a recession. Kendra Lewis said, "I've seen a drastic contraction in what people are willing to spend. When entrepreneurs are scared to invest and expand, that trickles down to a lot of other things in the economy." Lewis said even if inflation slows to a more normal level, she expects it will take some time to undo some of the trauma people have experienced in the economy during the past year. She said, "It takes time for consumer confidence to be rebuilt." The website Bankrate has also covered the same story. Whether it's the hottest inflation in 4 decades or this year's abrupt end to the lowest borrowing costs ever, Americans' finances haven't had it easy in 2022, and most aren't expecting their wallets to feel any better in the new year. According to a new Bankrate poll, about 2 in 3, or 66% of the American public, do not expect their personal finances to improve in the new year 2023. That total includes 36% who expect their financial situation to remain about the same, along with 29% who expect their finances to be worse. Slightly more than 1 in 3 Americans, or 34%, have hoped that their personal financial situation will improve in the new year. The findings highlight next year's rocky economic outlook, as experts warn of an increasing likelihood of a recession amid the Federal Reserve's rapid rate hikes. High inflation on everyday essentials such as gasoline, housing, and food is also biting into Americans' purchasing power. Also, Americans had varying degrees of concern about their personal finances heading into 2023. Of the 29% expecting their finances to get worse in the new year, 18% see their finances getting somewhat worse, while 11% are bracing for their finances to worsen significantly. White Americans are more than twice as likely as Black Americans to expect their finances to get worse next year, 32% compared to 15% respectively, while 27% of Hispanic Americans expect their wallets to worsen. At the same time, 51% of Black Americans expect improvement versus 30% of white Americans, and 37% of Hispanic Americans. The Americans who do not expect their finances to improve next year are overwhelmingly pointing fingers at inflation. More than three-fifths, or 63%, say continued high inflation will be the reason their finances do not improve, more than any other category, including the work of elected officials, 29%, stagnant wages or reduced income, 27%, and changing interest rates, 25%. MarketWatch website has also covered the same story. A Gallup opinion poll shows over half of U.S. households say inflation is causing them hardship, a figure that has barely changed throughout the past several months. According to the opinion poll, which was conducted among more than 1,800 American adults during November, 55% of Americans said rising prices have created financial problems for their household. Its results were published on Tuesday, 13th of December, a month after the Labor Department announced that prices across the country had shot up 7.7% compared to the previous year. The Labor Department put the increase down to higher costs of shelter, food, and energy. Gallup said the November figure had essentially remained unchanged since last August. Jeffrey Jones, senior editor at Gallup, said in a post for the polling firm's website, "The fact that Americans' self-reports of financial hardship are leveling off rather than declining, is likely to reflect just how much prices have risen over the past year and how much further inflation needs to subside before most Americans no longer feel burdened by it." Jeffrey Jones added, "However, the figure was notably higher than the 45% of Americans who said they were in the same boat a year ago." The survey also found that 77% of lower-income respondents were financially suffering from price increases, compared to 60% of middle-income adults and 42% of upper-income adults. It identified lower-income families as households, most of whose money goes towards rent and have a hard time paying their bills. Of the lower-income respondents, 28% said they were experiencing severe financial hardship, which Gallup described as affecting one's ability to maintain your current standard of living.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com
www.iribe.org/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The UK's rogue royal, Prince Harry, has come under fire both at home and abroad after admitting he killed 25 Afghans during his military service. In his highly controversial memoir, Spare, Harry claims he killed 25 people during his two tours of occupied Afghanistan, adding he didn't think of them as people, but instead as chess pieces that had been taken off the board.
Harry served as an attack helicopter pilot between 2012 and 2013. The book alleges that all the targets were combatants. However, following furious protests from inside Afghanistan, many British establishment critics have condemned the revelation, believing that it creates a new and unnecessary security threat against his own family members.
Amid the condemnation, British Muslims feel particularly outraged.
I don't think Harry should be silenced for what he said. In fact, I think he should be encouraged to go into more detail about the ideology and the training that's being pumped into British soldiers. It's not even the first time that he's likened killing humans with playing games. In 2013, he said it was a joy to use his controller during airstrikes. He said it was like playing a PlayStation or an Xbox.
Afghans are also furious, with many, including Taliban officials, issuing demands for Harry to be put on trial for war crimes.
The consensus in Afghanistan, and amongst probably Muslim opinion all around the world, is that he was involved in a war where hundreds of thousands of innocent Afghans were killed, a nation was destroyed, millions were displaced, and therefore he is a war criminal who should be accounted for his crimes. I run a British Muslim website, and we did an online poll the other day, and it had about 5,000 votes. It was a one-day poll, and 85% of our readers and viewers said that Prince Harry was a war criminal. And that's because Muslims, you know, we consider ourselves one body. And if one part of the body hurts, the whole of the body hurts.
Many British Muslims are left questioning how they now view a royal family with Muslim blood on its hands. Robert Carter, London.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian held talks Friday in Beirut with top-ranking Lebanese officials. The Iranian official said in a joint presser with his Lebanese counterpart that Iran wishes to see problems and difficulties go away in Lebanon, reiterating a previous offer to help resolve Lebanon's electricity crisis.
We would like to officially stress once more that the Islamic Republic of Iran is fully ready with its advanced scientific, engineering, and technical expertise to rehabilitate the power plants in Lebanon.